So our mission today, for you listening, is to uncover why virtually every single penny of stock market wealth created over the last 33 years happened while investors were completely unconscious.
Unconscious, sleeping, not looking at their phones.
Exactly. And also, we'll get into why Wall Street's big attempts to kind of hack the system ended in complete disaster.
Yeah, that part is, it's fascinating. But to really grasp the scale of this phenomenon, we have to stop looking at the trading day as this single continuous block of time.
Right, because it's not.
No, not at all. In terms of market mechanics, a 24-hour cycle is strictly bifurcated. So you have the daytime session,
which is the normal hours, right?
Exactly. The 6.5 hours when the New York Stock Exchange is physically and electronically open for regular trading. So 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern.
That's when you see the volume, when CNBC is broadcasting all the panic, right?
Yes. When retail order flow and algorithmic high-frequency trading are just firing on all cylinders. But then, yeah, the overnight session,
which spans from the 4 p.m. closing bell all the way until the 9:30 a.m. opening bell the next morning.
Right. The time when the primary exchange is closed. So, right, you know, you are commuting home, eating dinner, sleeping.
And the raw math when you compare these two distinct windows is just, I mean, it's staggering.
It really is hard to believe the first time you see it.
So let's lay it out. The anti-gravity researchers looked at 33 years of S&P 500 data. Specifically, they used the SPY ETF.
Right, the biggest one.
Yeah. And this runs from January 1993 all the way through April 2026. And they asked a really simple theoretical question. What if you took $10,000 and only exposed it to the daytime session?
Meaning you buy exactly at the 9:30 a.m. open.
Yep.
And then you liquidate exactly at the 4 p.m. close.
Right. So you are entirely in cash overnight every single day for over 3 decades.
And the result of that daytime-only strategy is an ending balance of just $12,312.
Which is a 0.63% annualized return.
After 33 years of compounding.
I mean, you would have underperformed standard treasury bills by a massive margin.
You'd basically be losing to inflation.
Completely. But, and here's the crazy part, if you reverse the strategy. If you sit in cash all day long, you buy at the 4 p.m. close, hold the position overnight, and sell at the 9:30 a.m. open.
That exact same $10,000 explodes to $125,594.
It's unbelievable. That is a 7.93% annualized return.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because I like to use an analogy here. Imagine working this really demanding, highly stressful 8-hour shift.
But your boss is breathing down your neck.
Exactly. You're putting out fires all day, making decisions just exhausted. But then when you finally look at your pay stub, you realize all of that chaotic daytime labor accounts for roughly 8% of your total compensation.
Wow. Put that way, it's, yeah.
Right. The other 92% of your salary is just quietly deposited into your account while you are at home, fast asleep in your bed.
That's a perfect way to frame it, because the buy and hold return for the S&P 500 over that entire 33-year period was 8.61% annualized.
And the overnight session captured 7.93% of it.
Exactly. Almost the entirety of the wealth generation of American large cap equities happened in the dark.
While daytime session, you know, with its trillions of dollars in daily turnover, essentially amounted to a rounding error of wealth creation.
It's just noise. All that daytime trading is just noise.
Now, I have to say, my immediate reaction to reading that was to look for some kind of structural glitch.
Oh, sure. Like a data error.
Right. Or I assumed this had to be an anomaly that was just specific to the S&P 500, or maybe some mechanical quirk of how authorized participants create and redeem shares for the SPY ETF.
Just to keep it pegged to the index.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you see a divergence that massive in a single instrument, your first thought is, okay, arbitrage mechanics must be skewing the data.
And the researchers actually anticipated that exact structural skepticism.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, they knew people would push back. So to prove it wasn't just a large cap issue or a SPY-specific plumbing issue, they ran the exact same decomposition on the NASDAQ 100 using the QQQ ETF.
The tech-heavy one.
Right. And they did it for the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index via the IWM ETF. And the data there is actually significantly more extreme.
Wait, really? More extreme than the S&P?
Oh, yeah. Since 1999, the overnight session for the NASDAQ 100 generated an astonishing 13.3% annualized return.
Okay, 13.3%? And the daytime?
The daytime session for that same tech index was negative 3.2%.
Negative. So you actually lost money during the day.
Exactly. And the Russell 2000 follows the exact same blueprint. Overnight returns were 11.3% annualized, while the daytime session destroyed wealth at a rate of negative 3.9% annualized.
Okay, so just to be clear, what's fascinating here is the sheer irony of it. You could have sat at a multi-monitor trading desk,
sweating over every tick.
Yeah, perfectly executing trades throughout the dot-com boom, the massive FAANG stock rally of the 2010s, and the entire AI supercycle. And if you only held risk during regular market hours, you lost money.
You lost money. All that wealth creation happened when the market was closed.
The small cap dynamic is especially wild to me.
Why? Because of the volatility.
Yeah, because the entire premise of small cap investing is that you are compensated with a premium for taking on higher volatility and lower liquidity.
That's the textbook theory.
Right.
Great.
But this data proves the market only pays you that premium if you hold the assets overnight.
Well, and the time horizon matters here, too, when you look at the different decades. Like, the 1990s were an absolute golden era for this effect.
The dot-com run-up.
Exactly. The overnight session was returning 19.7% annualized then. It essentially captured the entire structural bull market of that decade, while the daytime session just bled capital.
Wow. And then what about the 2000s?
The 2000s, which people often call the lost decade, were catastrophic for daytime trading. It dropped negative 5.2% annualized.
Ouch.
Yeah. It was only really in the 2010s and 2020s that the daytime session started printing positive returns at all, hovering around, 4.5 to 5.6%.
Which, I mean, that has to be driven by the massive structural shift toward passive index investing.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Because in the last 15 years, we've seen this avalanche of capital move into target date funds and systematic ETFs.
Just relentless buying.
Exactly. So when your payroll provider automatically deducts a 401k contribution and blasts it into the market, the custodian's algorithms, they don't wait patiently for the overnight session.
No, they just buy.
They execute what's called VWAP, volume-weighted average price orders, and they do it systematically throughout the trading day.
Right.
So that mechanical buying pressure basically creates a permanent structural bid underneath the daytime session that simply didn't exist back in the 90s.
Yeah, the target date fund flows absolutely moderated the discrepancy in recent years. The night effect didn't disappear. I mean, the overnight premium is still totally robust.
Yeah.
But the sheer force of indiscriminate daytime algorithmic buying kind of lifted that daytime floor out of negative territory.
Okay, so if you are listening to this and looking at your own portfolio right now, the obvious question is why? Why does the actual price discovery function this way?
Right, because we know the anomaly is universal across indices.
We know it spans multiple macroeconomic regimes.
And it survives distinct decades.
Exactly. So why does the stock market fundamentally prefer to generate wealth when it's technically closed?
So there are a few intersecting layers to the why. The first one is what they call the information hypothesis.
Okay.
If you consider the mechanics of when actual fundamental price-altering data enters the system, like think about publicly traded companies. They almost universally release their corporate earnings reports after the 4 p.m. closing bell or before the 9:30 a.m. open.
Oh, right. To avoid halting the stock during regular trading.
Exactly. And it's not just earnings. The Federal Reserve decisions, the Bureau of Labor Statistics releasing CPI or jobs data, major M&A announcements.
Unexpected CEO departures.
Yes. All this critical information is deliberately scheduled for outside regular market hours.
So you see prices adjust to that real fundamental signal instantly via these gap ups or gap downs right at the opening bell.
Exactly. The overnight session captures the actual digestion of macroeconomic reality.
While the daytime session is mostly just, what, the secondary reaction?
Pretty much. It's momentum algorithms chasing the gap. Or retail day traders reacting to price action rather than the underlying fundamentals.
No.
It is literally the noise following the signal.
That makes a lot of sense.
But we also have to account for the global markets hypothesis.
Because the U.S. isn't the only market in the world.
Right. Well, the New York Stock Exchange is closed. Tokyo, Shanghai, London, and Frankfurt are actively trading.
And their news moves our markets.
Exactly. Macroeconomic developments, currency fluctuations, geopolitical events happening in Asia and Europe. They are actively moving global capital.
So that aggregate global price discovery is then kind of baked into the U.S. opening cross.
Yep. The S&P 500 frequently gaps up at the open simply because, well, European market had a profoundly bullish session while North America slept.
Okay, so those structural realities explain the mechanics of the information flow. But there's a third explanation that I think makes the absolute most sense from a pure financial theory standpoint.
Oh, the Aaron Brown framework.
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. So Aaron Brown, he's a risk manager formerly at AQR Capital, and he frames this entire phenomenon around risk premiums and optionality.
I love this analogy.
It's so good. So to visualize this, think of market exposure like riding a roller coaster.
Okay.
If you are on a ride that has an emergency exit button right on your lap, meaning at any given millisecond, if the ride gets too terrifying, you can just push the button and step off safely.
That safety feature holds immense inherent value.
Exactly. Because you possess that optionality, the market doesn't have to offer you a massive reward to convince you to take the ride.
Because you're not really trapped.
Right. That is the daytime market. You have deep liquidity. If some massive geopolitical crisis breaks at 11 a.m., you can liquidate your entire portfolio to cash in a fraction of a second.
You press the emergency exit button.
Exactly.
But the overnight market stripped you of that optionality entirely.
You are locked in.
At 4 p.m., the lap bar locks into place, the lights go out, and you are strapped into the ride for the next 17 and a half hours.
And you cannot get off.
You cannot get off. You are forced to hold your exposure through potential overnight earnings disasters or surprise currency devaluations in Asia.
Or a sudden global pandemic.
Exactly. You have completely surrendered your liquidity and your ability to react. And because your capital is effectively trapped in the dark, you naturally demand a substantially higher premium to justify bearing that risk.
So the massive overnight return isn't a glitch in the matrix at all. It is actually the market functioning perfectly.
Pricing risk correctly.
Yes, correctly pricing a real-time put option. The daytime return approaches zero because there is virtually no trapped capital risk.
Right.
Investors are quite literally being paid a premium to bear the risk of the unknown while they sleep.
Which naturally leads to a really fascinating dynamic when risk actually does materialize, right?
Oh, like during a crash.
Yeah. Like what happens to this emergency exit button dynamic during a severe market crisis?
Well, the anti-gravity research isolated five major crisis windows to study this, and they uncovered a really stark asymmetry based on the type of crisis.
Right. Slow burn versus acute shocks.
Exactly. So in a slow burn bear market, like the unwinding of the dot-com bubble from 2000 to 2002 or the 2008 global financial crisis, the overwhelming majority of the capital destruction happens during the daytime session.
Which is counterintuitive until you think about it.
Right. During the dot-com bust, the daytime session accounted for a negative 42.8% return, while the overnight only contributed negative 10.6%.
And that comes down to the brutal mechanics of margin calls.
Yep. Because a slow burn crisis is characterized by institutional deleveraging.
Right. So when a prime broker taps a hedge fund on the shoulder at 11 a.m. and informs them, hey, you have breached your value at risk limits.
Those portfolio managers don't wait for the overnight session.
They can't. They're forced to liquidate instantly. They hit the bid on massive blocks of shares during regular trading hours.
And that cascading forced selling pressure drives prices into the ground while everyone is awake and watching the screens.
Exactly. But acute exogenous shocks behave entirely differently.
Like COVID.
Right. If you look at the COVID-19 crash in February and March of 2020, or even the sudden geopolitical tariff shocks in April 2025, the devastation there is almost entirely overnight.
Because it's breaking news from overseas.
Yes. During the initial COVID crash, the overnight session plummeted 28.6%, while the daytime session only dropped 7.3%.
Wow. Which validates the information hypothesis perfectly. The pandemic was a rapidly evolving global shock. You know, lockdowns were being announced, case counts were spiking, and supply chains were halting in Asia and Europe.
Well, the U.S. markets were closed.
Exactly. So that triggered massive gap downs at the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. But once the daytime session began, the intraday stabilization mechanisms fired up.
Right, the circuit breakers.
Circuit breakers halted the panic selling. The Federal Reserve stepped in with the emergency liquidity facilities. Congress started signaling fiscal stimulus. The daytime actually absorbed and stabilized the overnight panic.
It's fascinating. But we don't even need a historic once-in-a-decade crash to see this paranoia dictate market structure.
We don't.
No, it happens on a weekly micro scale.
Yep.
The data reveals these incredible calendar quirks.
Oh, the days of the week data?
Yeah. Tuesday night, is mathematically the most profitable overnight session of the entire week. It generates about 6.7 basis points of return on average.
Okay, Tuesday night is the peak.
But Thursday and Friday daytime sessions, they're consistently structurally negative.
Which, again, if you look at the incentives of institutional compliance departments, it makes perfect sense.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yeah.
Right. A chief risk officer at a major fund, they do not want to carry massive unhedged exposure into the weekend. Markets are closed for 48 hours.
Anything could happen globally.
Exactly. So they systematically de-risk. They trim their positions and buy downside protection on Thursday and Friday afternoons.
And by dumping that exposure into the market to avoid weekend headline risk,
they mechanically depress the Friday daytime returns. They create the exact downward price action they are trying to hedge against.
It's a completely self-fulfilling prophecy of institutional paranoia.
It really is. Now, if the pattern is that mathematically predictable and this risk premium is that structurally robust, you'd think the natural evolution of Wall Street is to attempt to package it into an accessible product.
Oh, of course. Wall Street can't resist an edge.
And they absolutely tried. In 2022, a firm launched a suite of products called Night Shares.
Right, specifically the NSPY ETF to capture the S&P 500 overnight effect and the NIWM ETF for the Russell 2000.
And honestly, the pitch to the retail investor was brilliant on paper. They said, skip the intraday volatility, skip the algorithmic noise. The fund will systematically buy the index at the 4 p.m. close and liquidate the position at the 9:30 a.m. open every single day.
The backtest must have looked like a flawless money printer.
They must have. So what does this all mean? Why did it fail? Because it failed spectacularly.
Oh, it was a disaster. The reality of live trading was far less forgiving than the backtests. Night shares were quietly liquidated in August 2023.
Barely a year after inception.
Barely a year. And they posted significant losses during a period when the broader S&P 500 was actually experiencing a substantial rally.
Wait, if they have to buy at the close and sell at the open every single day, the transaction costs of crossing the bid-ask spread 500 times a year must have just absolutely cannibalized that tiny nightly premium.
Exactly. That is the brutal reality of implementation friction in quantitative finance.
You can't escape the friction.
You can't. Academic papers exist in a frictionless vacuum, you know? Mm-hmm. They don't pay exchange fees or deal with slippage.
Right.
The average gross edge of the overnight premium on the S&P 500 is roughly 3 to 4 basis points per night. Mm. But simply executing a massive buy order at the close and a massive sell order at the open costs you 1 to 2 basis points in spread alone.
Oh, wow. So over half your mathematical edge vanishes before you even account for management fees or operational drag or tracking error?
And that's not even the worst part.
There's more.
They were broadcasting their trades to the most sophisticated predators on the planet.
Oh, the high-frequency traders.
Yes. By launching an ETF structured around market on close and market on open orders, they effectively telegraphed to every high-frequency trading algorithm exactly what they were going to do.
It's like putting a target on your back.
Completely. If I run an HFT desk and I know an ETF is mechanically obligated to buy hundreds of millions of dollars of SPY at exactly 4 p.m.
You just position yourself ahead of that order imbalance.
Right. I step in front of them at 3.59 p.m. I buy the underlying liquidity and I sell it back to the ETF at a fractional markup at the closing cross.
And then you do the exact reverse at the open.
Yep. The algorithm systematically extracted whatever tiny sliver of profit remained.
So it serves as a perfect case study in market microstructure. The academic anomaly was completely real.
The premium existed.
But it could not survive contact with the friction of the real world. Just because an edge is mathematically verifiable in a data set doesn't mean it can be captured cheaply enough in a daily trading wrapper to function as a viable commercial product.
Exactly. The frictional cost of constantly entering and exiting the market destroyed the very wealth it was trying to capture.
Wow. Okay, so we have dissected the math, the structural causes, and the failed quantitative attempts to exploit it.
We covered a lot.
We did. But taking a step back, looking at the implications for, you know, just a standard portfolio for you listening, the correct strategic response to the night effect is actually almost laughably simple.
It really is. You do absolutely nothing.
Nothing at all.
You sit on your hands.
Because by simply being a long-term buy and hold investor, you automatically harvest the entire overnight premium.
Right. You don't need a specialized ETF.
And you definitely don't need to incur the massive frictional costs of daily rebalancing.
No. You just maintain your exposure, let the capital remain trapped overnight, and seamlessly collect that compounding wealth generation.
Alongside whatever modest structural drift the daytime passive inflows provide nowadays.
Exactly. This raises an important question, though, about how we perceive the act of investing.
In what way?
Well, the financial entertainment complex, you know, the news networks, the Twitter gurus, they condition us to believe that returns are a direct reward for furious activity.
For monitoring real-time data feeds.
Right. Analyzing candlestick charts, mm-hmm. actively trading in and out of positions all day. But this data proves the exact opposite.
Returns are not a wage paid for daytime labor.
No. They are compensation for the passive, patient bearing of risk over time.
That is so profound. Every minute you spend agonizing over intraday volatility or stressing over a red candle at 2 p.m. is effectively a waste of emotional energy.
It's totally pointless.
And more importantly, it really highlights the devastating cost of panic selling during market hours.
Oh, yeah. That's the worst thing you can do.
When you get spooked by a midday headline and liquidate your portfolio, you are voluntarily surrendering the overnight premium you were owed for taking that risk in the first place.
You are paying the frictional costs to abandon the 92% of wealth creation.
Just to avoid the chaotic 8% of the daytime noise.
The market compensates you most handsomely when you are stripped of your control, when that lap bar is locked and you cannot intervene.
The single most profitable action an investor can take is simply stepping out of the way and letting the market price risk in the dark.
Exactly. Just let it happen.
I want to leave you with a different paradigm to consider, though, looking forward at how market plumbing is evolving.
Okay, where are we going with this?
While we know this overnight premium exists specifically because capital gets trapped when the bell rings at 4 p.m.
Right, the lack of liquidity.
But we are steadily moving toward a world of 24/7 continuous trading.
Oh, that's true.
The cryptocurrency markets already operate this way. There is no opening bell, no closing cross, no weekend pause.
It's just always open.
And traditional brokerages are increasingly expanding access to overnight equity trading hours, too.
Yeah, you can trade certain names at 2 a.m. now.
Exactly. So if the technology eventually pushes the legacy stock market to never close, effectively removing the roller coaster lap bar entirely, what happens to the night effect?
That's a great question.
If capital is never truly trapped, does the premium vanish completely? It really forces us to ask if this massive engine of wealth creation is a permanent fixture of financial gravity or just a temporary inefficiency in a market that hasn't quite learned how to stay awake.